giving you cutting-edge information, and so excited to be here as the host again. I haven't hosted in a while. I've been on vacation and traveling, but it's great to be here. We gave the natural nurse the day off, and we have an exciting guest. And it's a subject near and dear to my heart, you know, as the founder of the University of Bridgeport Naturopathic School, which recently closed, of course, unfortunately. But I had an opportunity to teach a class called Clinical Forum, where we taught lots about what's called Functional Medicine Laboratory. So I was in charge of that whole 20-week course. So I'm really excited to talk to our guest today, and that is Dr. Kylie Burton. And she's a chiropractor, and she's also a certified functional medicine practitioner. She can talk about that in a little bit there. And we're going to be talking about her book, Why My Labs Are Normal. And I guess you can put in parentheses, and I still feel really bad. She specializes in functional medicine, helping thousands of individuals with seemingly impossible health struggles find answers, healing, and hope, even though they've been told that their blood work is normal. So we'll talk about that. This is one of my pet peeves. So you got the right host here, that's for sure. Besides helping patients, she teaches practitioners how they can level up their patient results using functional blood work methodology. She hosts different podcasts, Beyond the Diagnosis with Dr. Kylie, and been featured on five international radio shows. Fantastic. And on TV, she's been on Good Morning Utah, Fox 26 Houston, The List. And we're really excited to have her on. Doctor, how would you like me to call you? Dr. Kylie, Dr. Burton, Dr. K?
Most people call me Dr. Kylie.
Dr. Kylie, great
Yeah.
to have you on.
You too. Thanks for coming and joining me. And I can't wait to talk blood work with you. I did not know that was your history.
Yeah, you picked the right guy, that's for sure. So, and we'll kind of, go outside the 15 questions if that's okay with you because of my expertise as well. But let's just talk about what I'll just give you a little background on me. I've been a naturopathic doctor. I graduated in 1990 from Bastyr. I've been involved with the profession a long time, and was involved when even Dr. Bland, he was one of our professors that often visited Bastyr back in the day when he was kind of looking at this whole functional medicine thing, which is really an off branch of holistic looking at different paradigms.
Yeah.
So it's like looking at disease versus looking at how healthy things are running in your body. And that's like a different mindset that I don't think conventional doctors still understand. I mean, hopefully they're coming around, and certainly patients don't understand. So tell me a little bit about your background as a chiropractor and how you became an expert in looking at people's regular old blood work, which I used to tease it. I used to say, the doctors are doing this like leave it to beaver blood work, which is like was good in the 50s, but now that we're in this time, we're kind of way more advanced than that. So tell us about your background.
Yeah, so I grew up in Utah. I grew up in Western medicine, actually. When we got sick, we went and got an antibiotic because that was the thing that we did. And I headed into college. I took a nutrition class and I loved it. And I thought, okay, this is a great idea, taking food and using it as medicine. Now, this is nutrition 101, where we are taught the food pyramid, the food plate, the RDA values, and all the stuff that I have now kicked out the window. For example, we were taught that dairy is a good source of calcium. That's gone. Dairy is inflammatory, right? So this is the world I grew up in. And after I graduated with my bachelor's degree in nutrition, I knew that that was just one step along my journey, but I didn't know what the next step was. So I sent out 1.5 million applications to a variety of different jobs. And the one I took was an assistant for a chiropractor. Now, I had no idea what chiropractic even was. Never even been to a chiropractor before in my life, had no clue. So I was his assistant for about a year. And while I was his assistant, he did a little bit of functional medicine, which totally introduced me to the entirely different world of my functional medicine. And I was like, why don't we all do this? Like, this makes total sense. Why are we not treating an unhealthy person and helping them get healthy, not treating the diagnosis and managing it for the rest of their life? So while I worked for him, I had a lot of ladies come in. And since I was the assistant, they would see me first. And they would tell me about libido problems and hormone problems and fatigue and, stuff that us girls get to deal with for our life. And then they would say, oh, but don't tell him. And I would say, okay, it's not my job to tell him, but he can help you if you tell him. So I just realized, you know what? Why don't I go get a degree so that I can help these women in the way that they need help from a woman to woman standpoint? So I did. I went off to Oregon, which was Western States, University of Western States, to get my chiropractic degree. It was on the completely opposite end of what he did because he went through life. And if you know the difference between the two schools, life is very philosophical. The school I went to is very scientific and evidence-based. And he was like, you're going to get brainwashed. I'm like, no, I'm not. I can stand my own ground. And I did, because during school, I stood my own ground, ended up getting suspended for a week. And there, I was told that I was trying to do, I mean, I was doing functional medicine in clinic. And you know the drill. We have to, as students, we have to work underneath a clinician and get everything approved from that clinician. I was doing that. And my clinician knew everything I was doing. But I had this one particular patient come in from the community, and I was full of patients. I was not one of those students who struggled to get their numbers. I was struggling to get all of the other work done because I was always with patients. She came in from the community, and she had had a migraine for like 3 years. And nobody could figure out what was causing this migraine. She'd been to specialist after specialist after specialist. And here she comes to me, a student, trying to receive help. And I knew right then and there that if I treated her like everybody else did, I was going to get the same results. And that wasn't okay with me. So that was really the flip of the switch, where it was like, I have all this blood work sitting in front of me. I have all these labs. Why can we not gain something from them? We're reading them wrong. If that's the case in this scenario, which it is for countless of people in the United States, especially. Can I
Yeah.
keep
So,
going?
well, no, it's an interesting story. Thank you for sharing that, because it brings up, the idea that from the average laboratory, we could glean a different way of being. And I say that that's very interesting. One of my students, she was trying to enter naturopathic school, and she was very interested the way that we as holistic practitioners look at physiology a little different than the average physiologist. It's like we read the same, Guyton, with all the function and how the body works, but we see it a little differently, and that then guides our way of treating patients and things like that. And the same can be said with laboratory work. So tell us about what the average person, what the average medical doctor, maybe it's because of what the average insurance pays for. I don't really know. I mean, I have a feeling that has a lot to do with it. But what do they usually come in and get as their routine once a year, family practitioner, leave it to Beaver lab test, like I say.
I think it varies depending upon the individual, because what I've experienced is, so on my journey to get to labs, I was like, okay, we have functional medicine lab tests at our grasp. We can take these fancy GI tests and these fancy adrenal tests and these fancy oat tests, and they're all very helpful, but they cost a hefty amount of money. And when I first started practice in 2018, not that long ago, I experience, like a lot of my clients couldn't afford thousands of dollars of lab tests, not to mention thousands of dollars of treatments. So I went back to this whole idea of, okay, what do we already have? What do they already have from their doctor? So instead of ordering more blood work, I actually started pulling their medical records, and you would get a variety. There would be some times where a doctor would just take a CBC with no differential. And to me, the differential is the magic. It is like the five most important markers in all of blood work ever combined. Sorry, I got two little kids and the one keeps coming into my room.
No worries.
Okay, so blood work.
You're talking about differential.
Differential. Okay,
so what is that for a patient that doesn't know what a differential is?
So the CBC is a regular blood test that we all get taken on. It starts with the white blood cell count and it goes all the way through the red blood cell count down to the platelets. And then there's these five markers known as the neutrophil count, the lymphocytes, the monocytes, the eosinophils, and the basophils. Those five markers are what make up the differential. And you'd be surprised, a lot of practitioners don't even know that either. Cause I've been teaching them for a few years. I'm like, what's the differential? It's like those five markers.
Yeah.
So a doctor can check.
It's the individual types of
the types of white blood cells
that have different jobs, right? They have different jobs.
For sure. And to me, like I said, those are the top five markers in all of blood work, because it's like, are you fighting an infection or not? And infections are systemic, so they can wreak havoc on anything, producing symptoms of any kind, which may or may not lead to a diagnosis, and so on and so forth. So the CBC with differential is the most common. Occasionally, you'll get a cholesterol panel if a doctor wants to check that. On a rare occasion, you'll get more than just a TSH. Usually it's TSH for thyroid and that's it. And that's like not even a thyroid marker, but we'll get to that later.
Yeah, I have a lot to talk about with that, but okay.
Yeah. And then we got the metabolic panel, which consists of things like sodium and potassium and fluoride and things like that.
Kidney function, right? The EGFR is involved with that.
ALT, albumin, ASP, liver.
Right, liver function, albumin, and globulin, which are proteins in your body. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Electrolytes, CO2 levels, all part of that whole, what they call we used to call it the SMAC back in the day. I'm dating myself. I graduated. I got out of medical school in 1990, so I've been a doctor for 30-something years already. So
I'll tell you what I was doing.
Okay. We used to call it different things back then. But now it's just called, I think, comprehensive wellness profile or metabolic profile or something.
Comprehensive
like that.
Metabolic profile. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I just take this normal blood work and I figured out how to actually get answers from it. And the answers that you and I look for are not diagnoses. These are answers that are telling us, okay, you're unhealthy. Why? What's making you feel the way you feel? I always get asked the question, you know, do you treat POTS? Do you treat MS? Do you treat Parkinson's? Do you treat thyroid problems? Do you treat infertility? Like, do you treat XYZ? Yes and no. Because no, I'm not treating that diagnosis. And no, I'm not even treating the symptoms. I'm treating an unhealthy person. And by helping that unhealthy person get healthy, the symptoms just resolve and go away.
And very, very holistically, very well holistic put. I mean, that's exactly the, way to think about it. And, you know, a lot of times the body has... Well, I think it goes back to our philosophy, both chiropractors and naturopaths. Turns out that many naturopaths were chiropractors back in the day. Like, for instance, Western States was a naturopathic school. back in the day with a chiropractic school back in the 50s until they kind of split based on the more stringent chiropractic regulations, which were adopted then after the war. I taught medical history for a long time too. So
I didn't even know that. I went
to school, isn't that interesting? So then the Western states chiropractic became independent, and they had to form a naturopathic school, which was the National College of Naturopathic Medicine was formed in 1957, I think, or something like that. I might be wrong, a date or so. But yeah, so they kind of separated. But they were often together. Actually, the famous Dr. Bastyr himself of the Bastyr University, the most renowned natural health university in the world now, was a DC. He was a chiropractor and a naturopath too. So we share a common root, but one of our philosophies is to treat the person, remove obstacles to cure, help establish the foundations of health, or what we call the therapeutic order of healing. Like, for instance, a chiropractor is a doctor of the nervous system. I know I'm going tomorrow to see my chiropractor. I go all the time, because I realized that they're just not cracking your bones. They're reestablishing communication between all the cells. And I think that people have to know that and understand that. So I'm sure my chiropractor, Dr. Bavaro, would be very proud of me talking about that. But yeah, so like you said, we're reestablishing the parameters of health. So what are those parameters in your philosophy?
I mean, everybody wants to know their symptoms, and I'm a pretty healthy individual overall. I don't go crazy on the whole eating organic and all the things, because I have a 6-year-old, a 3-year-old, and a baby on the way. But I think, it changes per person, because in the health industry, we use a lot of fear. And this, especially in the alternative world, but you can say, I mean, actually in both worlds, because look at the last 3 years. Like, it was total fear driven. The whole COVID thing, fear driven. You get into the diet and you start looking at diet, and it's like, oh my gosh, what can I eat? What's not toxic? What's pure, clean, like, even when you get into the organic world, it's still not perfect. But you have to come at it from a perspective of, one, my body's designed to heal. And when I trust my body, it can handle all of the environmental factors that it's been given. But I have to trust my body. So, like, there's a few people on social media, and they're big names. Like, I can't even follow them, because it's just so frustrating how not down to earth they are. Like, I don't have a $5,000 a month food budget. I don't. And so it's like, I'm a realistic person because I'm sitting in the shoes of everybody else. But I just think that we're taking it so far to the extremes on both ends, with the diet, with the supplements. I mean, people will say to, like, you've seen it, people have duffel bags and cupboards full of supplements that somebody told them that they needed to take to be healthy. And they needed, you know, glutathione, they needed the turmeric, they needed all the things to be healthy, rather than just trusting their body. And I've had so many people on my social media say, hey, I have this, I've been taking this, and what should I do? And I'm like, how about you just, like, take a break from all the supplements? Give your body a month without taking a pill and just see how you feel. And then they realize, I feel pretty good. Do I actually need all of that stuff? Because the supplement industry is no different than the pharmaceutical industry. It is a billion-dollar industry.
Yeah.
And they want you on those supplements. So do I recommend a whole bunch of things? No. I recommend, like, 4 or 5 things at a time, like per month in my supplement plans, that are really going in to get the job done and to help that inner body heal, the physical part of it heal. And then, not to mention, once you heal the physical part, or as you're healing the physical part, you got to heal the emotions and the internal mentality state and the environment. Like there's so much more that goes on in our health than just what's happening on the inside of our body from a physical perspective. So overall health in general, yeah, you can be symptom free, but if your mind's playing games with you, or if you have all this, I mean, everybody's human. We all have emotional traumas, whether you want to believe it or not, you're human, you do. And it's a matter of healing all of it, not just taking supplements to, again, mask a symptom. It's taking supplements to use to heal. And I think we've gone away from that a lot in alternative medicine, even. Like, I can't tell you how many times someone comes to me and says, well, I went to this person and I mentioned that it could possibly be my thyroid, so that they just threw me a thyroid supporter or a homeopathic, and it's just supporting my thyroid. But in reality, the thyroid's just one, it's like the bottom of the totem pole. If you're not looking higher up on the totem pole to figure out what's causing the thyroid to be messed up, you're missing the whole picture.
Yeah, I mean, being an old timer now, I guess, my professors were into the real foundations of health, and they didn't really have the whole variety of supplements back then. But it was like, what are the building blocks of your health? What are the foundational aphorisms or proverbs of health? I'll give you an example. Like, you know, in naturopathic medicine, there's six principles of health, everything from do no harm, doctor as teacher, prevention, treat the underlying causes, don't suppress symptoms, etc. But then there are these very powerful aphorisms like chew your food.
Yeah.
You know, don't Hooverize your food, Fletcherize your food. So I made that up. But anyway, Hoover, like Hoover vacuum versus Fletcher, was an old time naturopath that believed in chewing your food 100 times. And he cured, if you go back in the old books from the 1800s or so, he cured all these people of GERD. All these, they didn't need licorice. They didn't need these natural proton pump inhibitors, or whether it's natural or not. Sometimes he put them on digestive enzymes and some bitter herbs, but he basically had them chew their food and don't eat driving their car. And well, they didn't have really cars back then. I guess they're horse and buggy.
Yeah. It's such a different lifestyle. But even I had GERD when I was 17, 18 years old. I had to get my throat scoped 3 times in my senior year of high school.
Don't eat late.
I couldn't swallow.
Don't eat late. Don't eat after 8, right? After 8 gains weight. I mean, these are the proverbs of health that I know we're getting a little further from your topic, which we want to get to, but I think it's so important that you're a doctor that believes in that, and you're a younger doctor than I am now, getting close to retiring soon in a couple of years, but it's great to have young people at the vanguard that are teaching these principles that we forget, because you can be a functional medicine doctor still using an allopathic model, but just prescribing vitamins and herbs to take away a symptom. But that's not the model. That's not the holism model. So it's interesting that you're akin to that. And I really appreciate that. And I think the natural nurse would appreciate too, because we're both people that have been around for a long time in the holistic medicine field.
I think, so what happened to me was, I was doing patient care in 2018, 2019, and I got pregnant with my second in the end of 2019. And I have rough pregnancies. So I was like sick in bed, getting IVs, throwing up, the whole things. And I couldn't get myself to the clinic, which was only a 10-minute drive from my house. And I finally was like, okay, let's just pull the plug. Let's just stop the brick and mortar thing and let's go virtual. This was in October of 2019. Well, we all know what happened 6 months later.
Right.
And so I was already virtual in my platform doing the blood work thing. So I had a lot of practitioners, colleagues reach out to me and say, how are you doing what you're doing? Can you teach us? So I've been doing a lot of education, not only from teaching practitioners like chiropractors who have been hands-on for the last 25 years of their life, learn how to read blood work a better way and take that as their platform to go virtual. And then how to run a virtual clinic. And they always have clinical questions, right? So I have another colleague who is now working with me as well, and he's a lot of the clinician side, but they always will say, hey, I have a patient who walked in with AS, or I have a patient with who walked in with, you know, you name it, whatever diagnosis it is. Do you have a protocol for that? And it drives me crazy. Drives me nuts. I'm like, you've been hanging around for me for how long? And we're still treating diagnoses? It's no different than the Western medicine model. We have to literally remove our brains out of society, out of what we have been trained to do in all medicine, and get into the world of why are we sick? Why are we unhealthy? And then just start healing the body. And most of it starts in the gut. So I don't really care what diagnosis comes across. It's like, okay, what's happening inside your gut? What's happening inside all of your organs, inside your systems, inside your cells? Because when we can get the systems working efficiently and all the organs within the system and all the cells helping those organs out, now we have a smooth running machine.
I think the algorithms, you know, or the protocols are kind of like for people that are new to the field and just don't have a clue as to how you would even think about that particular thing. And they look at the commonalities amongst people suffering from a particular malady, but they don't look at the individual expression of the disease that the patient comes into you like you're looking at. So they both have some benefits, but you know, like you said, it's not following. You know, some people, they just follow the algorithm exactly without even paying attention that this person is, like if you look at Ayurvedic medicine, this person's kapha or this person's vata, skinny as a rail, and they both have hypertension. Well, you're going to, you know, in the ancient medicines, you're going to treat the person who has the disease, not the disease the person has. You're going to look at their dosha or their constitution. And a kapha person with hypertension, they're going to be treated totally differently than a vata person, you know, skinny as a rail type of thing, worry wart. You know, kapha people, they couldn't care. They don't worry about anything. But they have other issues that are causing their hypertension versus, you know. So you get the idea. You're treating the individual. I love that. And can you take that individuality and look at their blood work? Can you look at, like,
that's the beautiful part about it, taking their blood work.
We have a few minutes till break. We're going to take a break in about maybe 3 or 4 minutes. We'll let you just answer that question there, and then we're going to play our natural medicine chest, which is a cool program, and then we'll come back and talk more about the program. But just letting you know, so how do you glean their blood work? They come in with their CBC back, their thyroid back, the typical stuff that the allopathic doctor does. How do you take it from there?
So I look at it in a different way, right? Because we have the normal lab ranges. Those normal lab ranges, let's just use TSH, for example, because it's a very popular marker.
That's the thyroid marker, right?
Correct. The thyroid stimulating hormone, which is the number one marker people get for managing their thyroid. It has nothing to do with their thyroid, but whatever. We'll get to that later. The TSH on any given lab test is, the range is between 0.5 and 5.5.
Right.
Now, I always like to reference, like, that range is like trying to find your favorite restaurant somewhere between California and New York. Good luck.
I love that. Good analogy.
Yeah. So no wonder why so many women are like, have all of the thyroid symptoms and yet their thyroid comes back normal, because normal to them doesn't mean it's normal to everybody else in the world that they're being compared to. So we've taken that range and we condense it. And we saw, okay, now if you fall, I like the range 1.8 and 3. That's my TSH range. There's a wide variety of ideas out there, but 1.8 and 3 is my go-to. So now if you're falling less than 1.8 or higher than 3, now it's like, okay, you're not bad enough to elicit a diagnosis, but your thyroid's not functioning well, which is why you still have all the symptoms. And that's just like one example.
So you're looking at degrees of functioning of the thyroid. It's not all hit or miss.
Yeah, it's not like, oh, if you fall, if you're 0.2 or 5.6, now I can give you a diagnosis of hypo or hyper, and not to mention it's usually Hashimoto's anyways. So it's looking at it from a, okay, we have some dysfunction going on, but again, the thyroid's just the bottom of the totem pole. So I got to figure out what's trying to pull my thyroid underneath the water and sink it. When I can figure out what's trying to pull it underneath the water and sink it and relieve that, now I can heal a thyroid without even treating the thyroid.
Right.
I use the blood work, all of the markers to figure out what is pulling the thyroid.
You look at the person have a, you know, hypothalamic pituitary issue, or they,
yep.
Are they making enough T4, which is the thyroid hormone? Or do they have enough iodine or manganese or copper or B vitamins to actually make that thing? And then are they changing it from T4 to T3, which happens actually outside your thyroid? And, you know, that has to do with...
Yeah, gut and liver. I always say, like, if you have a messed up gut or liver, your T4 is not going to convert to T3. And you want T3.
Are you bringing the thyroid into your cells to stoke the fire? It's like the man or woman carrying the oil into your house and putting it in your tank, you know? And that's a big problem, too, that we see. And that's where we get into, you know, excessive copper or heavy metals that are interfering with the thyroid function. So yeah, holistic doctors look at many aspects of thyroid, which can be gleaned from that laboratory. I love it. So we got to take a break. We're going to play our natural medicine chest and a couple of station IDs. When we return, we're going to talk about other aspects, and we're really excited to have you on the program. So stay with us, folks.
On this edition of the Natural Medicine Chest, we'll discuss jojoba, the miracle plant of the desert.
Jojoba is spelled J-O-J-O-B-A, but is pronounced according to its Spanish origins. The jojoba plant grows in the American Southwest and the Sonoran Desert in Mexico. The jojoba is a large bush-like plant resembling mistletoe. It can reach a height of 15 feet and can live from 100 to 200 years. The Sonoran Indians have used the oil pressed from the jojoba beans for centuries. Father Juniper Serra, founder of 21 missions in California, noted in the early 1700s that the local Indians were using jojoba oil for treating sores, cuts, bruises, burns, and as a diet supplement, to soothe skin from sun and wind burns, as a cooking oil, and even as a beverage.
The importance of jojoba as a cash crop was proclaimed in 1935, but it was not until 1974, when the killing of sperm whales was banned, that the government began to study jojoba oil in depth as a substitute for whale oil. The National Academy of Sciences concluded, jojoba oil has a radically different chemical structure than any other known oil. Most oils break down or turn rancid. Jojoba, on the other hand, is hypoallergenic, non-toxic, never turns rancid, and does not break down even under high temperature and pressure.
The University of California at Riverside did a study where they cooked 27 batches of popcorn in the same heated jojoba oil. The last batch was just as perfect as the first. These unusual properties are unique to jojoba oil because, chemically speaking, jojoba oil is not really an oil at all, but is a liquid wax. Its composition is almost identical to sebum, which is the oil secreted by human sebaceous glands to help to protect the skin from the environment.
Jojoba has a myriad of usages. The cosmetic industry takes advantage of its compatibility to human skin by adding it to shampoos, conditioners, moisturizers, and many other cosmetic products. In medicine, jojoba can be used directly on rashes, cuts, and psoriasis. It may also be used as a lubricant for artificial hearts. jojoba contains a natural appetite suppressant, which can be used in weight loss products. It has no known side effects. In industry, jojoba is known to be a superior engine lubricant and will cause a car to run 20 to 30 degrees cooler when added to the crankcase oil.
So, if you are interested in a miracle plant from the desert, reach for jojoba in your natural medicine chest.
Thank you very much for joining us with Dr. Kylie Burton. And we're really excited to have you on again to talk about these things. So welcome back.
Yeah. Ready to dive into some blood work?
Yes. Now, we just got through the pandemic and we know about viruses. And what might we see if our body's not responding to viruses with your CBC?
This is my favorite topic to talk about, the infection part, because those infections are found inside the differential, which we referred to at the beginning of the show. The differential found inside the CBC are the neutrophils, the lymphocytes, the monocytes, the eosinophils, and basophils. And I've taken those and made them stupid simple. People always ask me, where do I get my training from? Well, I've taken lots of trainings on blood work from high individuals like yourself, and made their brilliant minds simplified so that all of us general public can understand it, and also make it for practitioners to where they can implement the blood work immediately in their clinic. So let's dive into the marker called lymphocytes. Now, the lymphocytes, their job, one of their primary jobs is to fight viruses. Same thing with the monocytes. So you have two of the five markers that are indicative of a viral infection. Now, it might be COVID. I highly doubt it because there's millions and thousands of viruses that our bodies naturally combat, but they're not always bad either. Infections like viruses and parasites and bacterial infections can be a good thing. It's all about the balance of the microbiome. So let's just say we have an individual, a mom, who has been complaining about chronic fatigue. And she's got, you know, two or three young kids, kind of like my story. I haven't fought ever chronic fatigue, except from chiropractic school, because you never get sleep. But she's been told she needs an antidepressant, she needs to sleep more, she needs to just, you know, suck it up and fight through it, even though she knows something's wrong on the inside. So I get a lot of these scenarios. I pull their blood work, or they already have their blood work in their possession, so they just give it to me. And I look at the lymphocyte count and the monocyte count, amongst everything else. But a big driving factor in chronic fatigue are these low-grade viruses. And you'll hear a lot where people will say, oh, at 18, I got diagnosed with mono. Mono is a virus, Epstein-Barr virus. And the treatment for mono is, okay, good luck. Go home for 3 months and sleep, because that's basically all your body can do. And they never really give their body the tools they need to fight that thing off. And when I say fight it off, I just mean make it dormant, because once it's there, it's there. And we want to keep it dormant in the body, not active. When that Epstein-Barr virus is really, really active, that's when, like, I had an 18-year-old boy who was excelling in school. All of a sudden, he's falling asleep in classes, and his teachers are telling mom that, you know, he's now falling asleep. Well, we got his blood work, got his Epstein-Barr virus test. Sure enough, it was mono. And so what we did was we fed the immune system. And then not only did we feed the immune system, but we gave an antiviral herb. So lymphocytes, the magic number for me is 30%. If you have a lymphocyte marker over 30%, you know that your body is fighting some type of low-grade virus. And there's a reason why you don't have energy for anything else. It's too busy fighting the virus. Same thing with anxiety and depression. I see this a lot too. where someone's fighting depression and they've got this low-grade virus that they're fighting, so they really don't have motivation or energy to do anything else. And when the anxiety comes into play is when that virus gets really activated and throws an anxiety attack. So that's kind of what it looks like clinically. From the laboratory perspective, it's the lymphocyte marker over 30%. It can also be the monocyte marker over 7%. So those are the two magic numbers, 30 and 7. And if you're over that and you're like, I knew something was wrong with me, great. If you're under that, that's good too. I always like to see numbers that are off because it gives me answers. When numbers are like within the good range, it's like, oh, dang it. You can also grab lab work from, say you have blood work for the last 5 years and you've been fighting something for the last 5 years. And you've got blood work from 6 months ago, you got blood work from 2 years ago, you got blood work from 5 years ago. Get all of it because all of it will tell your story. And you might have great labs, a great lymphocyte marker and a great monocyte marker on 6 months ago when you were feeling good. That test, you took that test and it was a good day. You were able to wake up feeling rested. You were able to get the kids to school, remember to pick the kids up from school, and actually have energy to cook dinner, not just go grab takeout because you have no energy. Whereas 2 years ago, that was a day where you were like, I have to take a nap and I'm barely able to put the dishes in the dishwasher and hardly function. That's when it's going to show up in the blood work. So you might have a perfect lab 6 months ago, but 2 years ago or 5 years ago, that's why I love blood work, because I can sit and I can look at all of these labs and tell an individual story based upon the numbers. So lymphocyte count and monocyte count, those are the counts for viral impact.
Now, the East Coast just had this terrible fire smog from, you know, the fires up in Canada. And, you know, I just got out back from Denver on vacation, and my daughter who lives out there said, oh, we're always getting these fires from Alberta. Anyway, the point is that that creates a lot of particulate, gets in the lungs, and that can increase the other white blood cell in your discussion, which would be the eosinophils, which also are up with, I guess, allergies and whatever. So tell us a little bit about people that are fighting a lot of unknown or undiagnosed allergies.
The allergies are fun too. Chronic fatigue can be another fun one because you got mold.
Right.
You've got the stuff in the air, which can be from fires, but then you also have the stuff in the air, which can be from mold. Mm-hmm. And I had a patient one time where I did her blood work. This rarely happens, but in this scenario, it happened. We did her blood work, set her up on a really good 6 month treatment plan from a physical healing perspective. She was one of those that, you know, has tried everything, did all of the treatments, and not, she was coming to me as a last resort. Her numbers didn't look good. We did all the things, she didn't feel any better. So I said to her, okay, let's start looking in the environment. And sure enough, she fessed up that there had been a water leak in her basement for years. And she's never been able to afford fixing the water leak. Okay, now we can get into some mindset stuff with that. But of course, there's mold in the basement of her house. She won't move. She won't sell it. She won't clean it up. And here she is spending lots and lots of money on physical treatment and missing the whole boat in the room where it's her environment that is making her so sick. So she's going to go out and get all these ozone therapies and all the things and then come back to a very sick environment.
Nice.
So with the eosinophil marker, my magic number for eosinophils is 3%. If it's above 3%, I love how you've incorporated the environmental factors in it, because usually I'm like, okay, test for food sensitivities, or I don't even like to test because very few of them are actually accurate. Just know that we should probably go on an elimination diet and figure out what is the food sensitivity. And then the second thing is parasites are a big, you know, hot topic. And whether you're believing that parasites are in every single person with a pulse or whatever your stance is, that's what I use I use the eosinophil count to determine if parasites are an issue inside that individual. Because again, infections are there. Bacterial, viral parasites, they're there. They work great. They can be very helpful and very harmful, but you just have to have that balance. Like people will go to Mexico for cancer therapy and they're literally putting parasites in the potty. So they can be a good thing. When it comes to the environmental factors, because of the food allergies and the sensitivities of that specific marker, you can detect, you know, am I being, in, let's not just say, am I being impacted? Because you are. It's a matter of how much is it impacting me? And you should probably get on some type of binder to help your body eliminate those toxins. Because again, we can't avoid them. We just have to minimize our toxic load and help our body eliminate them.
Right. Help our body support it, support the way that our body normally will deal with toxins. And of course, it deals with different toxins differently. We know that. So what are some of the steps that, say, someone, I got to mention one thing. So chronic Lyme disease, which is very big on the East Coast. I don't know if it, back in Utah.
Mosquitoes like crazy. I live right by the Great Salt Lake, and it is mosquito haven around 7 o'clock at night.
Yeah. So, Lyme and mosquito-borne things and whatever.
And ticks. Ticks are in the mountains, too.
Ticks are in the mountains. Okay. So, yeah, we can't escape those things. And so I know the Lyme bug likes to evade the immune system like many bugs. They try not to throw up a penalty flag so the referees catch them. And, you know, then so they kind of try to stay what we call stealth. There's some people with bad infections in their mouths. They got bad root canals and they're wondering why they're sick all the time. So these are issues that we look at in holistic medicine. Stealth urinary infections. There was a study that showed that women who drink cranberry juice have less rheumatoid arthritis, particularly if they're housing a stealth urinary tract infection, Proteus mirabilis or Proteus vulgaris. So we know that some of these bugs can act kind of stealth, not give you like an overt infection, like I got a UTI, I have to go treat this, but, you know, kind of this quiet smoldering symptoms that give you the ill health. So can you detect smoldering infections with some of your blood, detective work?
I like to think about the way I approach these labs is they're more of a, you know, are these infections causing harm in the body? When it gets into Lyme is a little more complicated than that.
Okay.
Lyme is going to be, I like to test using Vibrant America Labs.
They have which one?
Vibrant America.
Vibrant America. Okay. It's one I haven't heard. So that's interesting. Okay.
Really? Yeah. That they have a very good Lyme panel. Okay.
Good.
And a very good mycotoxin test. For so like if you're wondering about mold and if mold is impacting your health, they got a mycotoxin test for that as well. They also have one of my favorite food sensitivity panels. I very rarely run it, but when it comes to food sensitivities, people think, oh, I'm just going to go get one of those $99 Facebook ad things and take the test. But those tests are only testing for raw foods in that form. So say you get a test back and it comes back positive for broccoli. Well, broccoli was tested in a raw form and just broccoli only. When broccoli is cooked, the protein changes. And now you might not be sensitive to it, but you don't know because the test didn't test for that. Or you throw broccoli into a, you know, casserole, because I live in Utah and we got casseroles all over. Not so much anymore, but they used to be big when I was growing up. And now the protein too has changed. So be very careful with the food sensitivity tests that you're commonly getting. But when it comes to Lyme has that needs the deeper aspects of testing. This is more of the scenario, you know, I feel like crap. No one's able to really help me figure out what's going on. And yes, the blood work can be very, very helpful, but the blood work's just one piece of it. if you're living in a toxic environment, it doesn't matter what you do. If you're...
Yes, I mean, some of my most chronic Lyme cases were people who've had all of these other obstacles to cure, like very high lead, very high mercury, other things that kept their immune system down so that these opportunistic bugs or infections could then rise up. Just like you were mentioning Epstein-Barr. We all have had exposure. I mean, when I tested, practically everyone has antibodies to it. Now, sometimes they don't have the antibodies that show that it's a newer infection. That's true. And if you see that, you know it's a reactivated type of thing. But you always wonder, well, why is this bug that's been in the body and the immune system has kept it at bay for a while, why is it all of a sudden rising up and causing trouble? So that's where you use the holistic model, I guess, to look at lifestyle. So what are some of the steps that you work in? Just to let you know, we have about 7-8 minutes left in the program. But so what are some of the steps that you take once you glean some of this information to work with people?
Yeah, when it comes to healing, I like to walk people through like a 4 or 5 step healing journey. Because when you get a set of labs, or even if you go grab my book and you start looking through your own labs, and it's like, oh my gosh, where do I start? You know, I have all of these markers that are falling outside of the functional range. You start in the first place. You have to support the body. Like we're depleted. And when we start talking, people want to jump right into detox and just detox everything. And that's not my thing, because when you try to detox everything, things can go bad. Things can go wrong in a hurry if your body's not prepared for it. So I like to do this support phase. And there's a few particular things that I find in this support phase that are very, very important. One is the vitamin D level. So if you have a vitamin D level, I would say less than 60, which is very different than the normal range of 32 to 100. If yours is less than 60, you are depleted. Your cells, every single cell in the body needs vitamin D. It is the number one key ingredient in your immune system. And yet we are made to fear a level of vitamin D above 100. You know, as soon as you get your lab test and your doctor says, oh, your vitamin D is at 109, stop taking vitamin D immediately. It's way too high. And I'm thinking, no, that's brilliant. That's an awesome number. But we're made to fear vitamin D. So, and we're also made to believe that we make vitamin D from the sun. And we don't make it very good anymore. Our bodies are not very good at it for a variety of reasons. But vitamin D is my first thing from the support phase. The next thing I want to pay close attention to in the blood work is the iron status. Now, you can find the iron status within red blood cell counts, but it's not very sensitive. I will go to war and I will always recommend you get an iron panel despite what the red blood cells say. Because that iron panel says so much more than what the CBC is indicative of for your iron. So just get an iron panel. Make sure your iron status is not good, but great. Every single cell, well, let's say that oxygen is transported to your cells via iron. And if your cells don't have oxygen, they ain't going to function. They can't produce. They can't make ATP or energy, you know? So feed the cells. The next thing are not necessarily the amount of B vitamins, but is your body able to utilize B vitamins? And there's a difference. So people can get B vitamin injections, they can take B vitamin pills, and they're really not changing anything because their body can't use them efficiently. So those are my three big key factors inside a supportive type first phase. You may need to support some blood sugar levels. You may need to support the detox system by, you know, adding in some liver and kidney support or whatever the markers are telling me that needed support. That's what we do in the first phase. And then the next phase is all about that gut destruction, is what I call it. I'm going to destroy the bad guys. And when I use that word, people think, okay, there might be something that goes wrong here. And when bad or negative or side effects come up, you know, I think about those negative side effects being your body is doing work. It takes work to heal. And you're experiencing it doing work. So let it go through it and not just hurry and mask up the work it's doing, because it's doing work and that's a good thing. What happens in that second phase is based upon what I see in the differential, the infections that I see in the differential, whether it be bacterial, viral. You can't determine fungal, but if it is a bacterial infection, I'm going to treat fungal too. Infections like to go together. Very rarely are they just one standalone infection. So it's either bacterial, viral, fungal all together, or parasitic. And the reason why I can just do or parasitic, because that treatment regimen handles all of them anyways. So once we've destroyed the bad guys, we got to get the good guys back in. We got to replenish the gut and finish rebuilding it. And that would mean all of your good probiotics, prebiotics, healing leaky gut, enzymes, hydrochloric acid, all the stuff that we think of as a good thing in our gut. Then the final or the fourth step would be, now that we've rebuilt the gut and we've eliminated the systemic problems, we can finally balance out the hormones. Mm-hmm. And I have so many people coming to me who say, you know, I've been working with this hormone therapy clinic. I'm on bioidenticals or whatever the hormone story is. And then they listen to me on a podcast or they found my book or whatever it was. And they're like, oh my gosh, there is something missing. I knew there was something missing. It's not just my hormones. Yeah. Hormones are just one system of the body. We got to fix all the other systems too, so that they work together. And then last but not least, if needed, detox. And I do with some detox in that phase too, with the gut destruction, to make sure that we're eliminating what we need to be eliminating. But then detox would be last on my list.
Hallie Burton is author of Why Are My Labs Normal? And we're so happy to have her talk about her ideas in functional medicine, helping thousands of individuals with impossible health struggles find answers. So we're really happy that you came on. And tell us a little bit about where people could get in contact you and your book.
So first, go to Amazon, find the book, Why Are My Labs Normal? That really dives into more than just the CBC. Like, I will teach you how to read your own blood work so that you know. And then the second thing is my podcast called Beyond the Diagnosis with Dr. Kylie. Those are the two best places to learn more, and then you can go from there.
Great. Yeah. So I know, you know, we ran out of time. Maybe we'll have you back on again to talk about some other labs, because I wanted to talk a little bit about the adrenals and thyroid more, and calcium and minerals. So I'm going to
there's a lot in labs that we can talk about. We can create a series on labs. I'm going to have
a reach out, and we'll do a part two.
Yeah, a whole series on labs. Let's do it.
Yeah, sounds great. Because and then we didn't even really talk about, you know, other functional labs that one could run. I know we're trying to save people money, but there's some pretty inexpensive labs and things that they can do. Like, you know, for thyroid, they can take their temperature. So, you know, anyway, unfortunately, we ran out of time. So what a pleasure to meet you. And thanks very much for being a guest here on The Natural Nurse and Dr. Z. Have a great day.
Thank you.